Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest in an encore appearance is a lady we're calling Gabby Girl. Gabby's a friend of Bonnie and me, and back in the early 80s, she was a private investigator who sometimes worked for Oscar Goodman. Goodman was the mob lawyer at the time. So a lot of her stories relate to mobsters, and it's a side of Vegas that we don't talk about very much. Before we get into those stories, Richard and I are going to check our mailbag and answer some of your questions. At Caesar's World in Atlantic City, our listener writes, I played $5 each on the small, tall, and all side bets. When they told me I had to place a pass or don't pass bet in order to play these bets, I bet $5 on both the pass and don't pass. They would not allow this because they barely had an edge on the combination of bets. Do I have any recourse? I'm going to start off with this one. And I think we said it a few times before, but sometimes casino managers are really stupid. The small bet requires players rolling all numbers from 2 to 6 before 7. There's about a 1 in 38 chance of this happening. According to the Wizard of Oz website, the house edge is either almost 8% or more than 18%, depending on whether the house pays 35 for one or 30 for one, respectively. The tall bet, player must roll the numbers 8 to 12 before the 7. It has the same likelihood and the same miserable odds as the small bet. The all bet is rolling all numbers between 2 and 12 except a 7. It has odds of about 190 to 1 against it. If the bet pays 175 to 1, the odds are 7.5% against the player. If the bet only pays 151, the odds are a whopping 20.5% against the player. If a player is willing to bet all three of these at once, the casino should be counting its lucky stars and not be a total jerk about it. Not all casinos are smart enough to recognize this. As to legal recourse, we could ask Bob Nersessian, but he's not licensed to practice in New Jersey and may not know those rules intimately. The player could, of course, thank the casino manager for not allowing him to commit financial suicide in this casino. Richard.
You know, I feel like there's an old joke about how the guys in a prison would yell out numbers, 37, and everybody would start laughing. And the new guy says, you know, what is that about? And they said, well, we've all been here so long, and we all know the same jokes, that we just numbered them because we've heard them so many times. So when he says 37, we know what joke that is, and that's why it's funny. And I feel like we should have that for these kinds of answers to questions. And this is number 37, and the answer is casinos are stupid. This is one of the stupidest things I have ever heard of. And that same boss who told him he couldn't do that, if he took the $5 off the pass line and moved it to the don't pass so that he had $10 on the don't pass, the boss would have been fine with this. But the casino would be making less money if he did that, right? Because the house edge on the don't pass is lower than the pass. So if you bet $10 on the don't pass, the house is making less money, but that boss would be happy with that bet. As I say, this is just one of the stupidest things I've ever heard.
And yeah, and the idea that the player would think it's good to do two $5 bets, yeah, where it is impossible to win, but he could lose if a 12 is on the come out.
Right, yeah.
And As long as he's going to make those stupid small, tall, and all bets, you might as well bet the pass line because it's at least correlated to.
What I would like to do is, well, maybe he wants the anti-correlation, right? So that he could, he has
so you
some
hedge,
insurance.
Hedge, on a, hedge on bets that are 20% against you?
Actually, what I would like to do is for, I would just like to play next to him and I'll book those bets for him so he doesn't have to make those pass line bets. Right? And I'll just book the bets for him. Win-win.
Win-win, except they're going to kick you out for stealing from the house. All right. Next listener wrote, I'm a blackjack player, and I'm not very good. I've been trying...
I love the start of this already.
I've been trying to teach myself the count, and I find that I'm constantly forgetting it. My question is, would it be just as effective to just count the aces and tens and not have to constantly be adding and subtracting, just adding? Also, if that would work, at what point would I start raising the bets on a 2 and a 6 deck shoe? So I'm going to try this before Richard because he's the blackjack expert and I'm not. Well, do you want it first or do you want me to go?
No, go ahead. It's...
Counting cards is not for everybody. If you're consistently forgetting the count, you just may not have what it takes to get good at this game. So if that's the case, don't play it. This is not such a huge tragedy since it takes a long time to get good, and many casinos are very fast to identify you and kick you out after you've taken all that time to get good. Counting the cards is only getting to first base. To make a successful blackjack player, and there are not very many out there, requires so much more than just counting the cards. You've discovered you're not very good at it? That's very useful information. Act on it.
Yeah, I would just say you either want to learn it or you don't. And it sounds like you have not put in enough practice, and that's okay. I mean, it takes work. That's what most people don't want to get about learning how to be good at any kind of gambling. They want to read a book and just be able to do it the next day and just win money. And it's not like that. It's just like a diet. You can read the book, but you actually have to do the exercise and stop eating the bad food. So if you don't want to put on in the work, that's fine. If you want a better choice, then buy Comp City and just go after the comps. Instead of counting cards, at least learn basic strategy or take a basic strategy card with you to the table so you can refer to it. And don't count the cards and just play for the comps.
All right, our last question from our listener this week. Do casinos have a problem with you using a video poker strategy card at the machine? And I lied. This is not our last question. And the answer is almost never. Or as we all know, you sometimes have a rogue casino manager with all sorts of funny ideas. That was number 45, Richard. You can laugh. If a casino employee tells you to put away, I recommend you do it. There are not laws against using information written down. The laws are against you using a mechanical or electronic device to help you. Using a cell phone or iPad to run a program to tell you how to play a hand is definitely against the law. It's rarely enforced, but if a casino decides to press charges against you for it, Bob Nersessian says he doesn't want to represent you because you are intentionally breaking the law, and that's not who he wants for clients. Using a strategy card is not against the law. Richard, do you use strategy video poker strategy cards in a casino?
You know, I haven't played video poker in quite some time, so if I were to be playing, I'm sure I would pull the little strategy. I actually printed it out in large print, so it's easier to read, and it's folded up on a piece of paper in my pocket, and I would pull that out and refer to it if I needed to.
All right. Somebody wanted to, he says he has some free play coupons in the Las Vegas Advisor and the American Casino Guide fun books. He's a table games player and knows nothing about video poker. What's the best way to redeem free play coupons that have to be used on a machine? And my answer is, assuming you have relatively few coupons for a relatively small amount of money, it doesn't make much sense to take this time and energy to get good at video poker. If blackjack is offered on some machines, play that. It might be 3% against you or so, but the idea with free play coupon is to get in and out quickly. And they're small enough that a percent or three one way or the other doesn't really affect you very much. If there are no machines for playing blackjack, you could try old-fashioned reels, specifically dollar reels. These spinners have about a 3 to 5% edge, not so big. With the coupons, stay away from the penny machines or the slot machines that have some branding, such as Ellen or Gilligan's Island or whatever. Penny machines are 10% or more against you, and branded machines have an extra percent or two taken out in order to pay people who owns the brands.
Yeah, you know, I would say if there are no blackjack machines, I would think you'd be better off playing jacks or better. Even not knowing how to play it, I would think that it would be better than a real machine.
Well, you still got to learn what the good blacks are better machines are and the bad jacks are better machines
well,
are.
Well, that's true, but
and there's not,
I mean, you'd have to have a pretty bad machine and play it pretty badly to get, you know, up to 5%, which I would expect a real machine to be.
The final question is, a player plays at these 15 machine bars, and sometimes people get a jackpot and they don't want to sign for it, so the bartender goes around and asks who wants to sign for somebody else's W2G. He's willing to pay 25%.
Wow.
And so the question is 25% too high? And so my do you want to talk about that, or
no, go ahead.
My first response is, we are talking felony here. The tax avoidance is legal. Tax evasion is not. So there sounds like there is a conspiracy here between the guy who hit the jackpot, the bartender, and the guy who's willing to sign for it. I would not want to be any three of those people. But given that minor technicality, the percentage you use is certainly subject to negotiation. If you're paying it, you want to pay as little as you can. If you are receiving it, you want it as high as you can, and you certainly got to tip the bartender in these places. So, I mean, some people are better at negotiation than others.
Well, it also has a lot to do with what tax bracket you're in.
Well, the person who signs it, like, in my case, I'm a professional gambler, and basically I can write off all W2Gs, basically. I can apply losses towards the wins, and so it is not like I'm paying a $4,000 jackpot that I signed for is like I'm not paying taxes on $4,000.
Well,
but if you, as a recreational player, get a $4,000 jackpot, you're paying taxes on $4,000.
Well, but wait a minute. Even you as a professional, presumably you are in profit at the end of the year. So
on good years, that's definitely true.
Yeah. So, and you're going to write off your expenses.
Yes.
Right. But so let's say that I'm just going to pick a number here. And let's say at the end of the year, after you write off your losses and your expenses, let's say that you earned $100,000.
Okay.
That puts you in a certain tax bracket.
Yes.
Now you just added an extra $4,000 to your income. So your tax is going to be whatever that bracket is. Call it 35% of $4,000.
But it doesn't quite work that way. You're not actually taxed on... In the professional gambler situation, you're not actually taxed on the W2Gs. You're taxed on the difference between the wins and the losses.
Right. And I'm saying that without that win, you have a $100,000 net profit, but now you've just added an additional $4,000.
Assuming somebody who was going to be willing to commit
a felony
to do this... Assuming that he wouldn't fudge his tax returns along with it is a big assumption.
Okay, all right. So I'm
assuming things kind of come out in the wash there.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go back to Gabby Girl. I bet Gabby Girl could talk him into paying less of a commission on the W2Gs. So Gabby Girl, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you for having me.
All right. First question. Have you ever worn a wire?
I did wear a wire in one circumstance. There was an investigation for DMSO, which was an ingredient that was added or discovered that was used for leukemia patients and different sets of immune disorders. And there was
That's the stuff you would rub on your skin.
Right? Yes.
I remember mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. And it had a very high garlic smell. And there was a DMSO clinic that was created, and lots of people from the Midwest were sending their convalescent elderly parents here for this treatment, which was not only put in their skin, but intravenously. After a period of so many deaths, whether they were natural causes, length of life, there was a group of families that put together a lawsuit. And what they wanted to know that they could not get the answer to was Otto Ravenholt was our coroner at the time. And Otto Ravenholt would be the person to give the professional opinion of the dangers of DMSO.
Uh-huh.
Not just from the medical standpoint, but from the autopsy standpoint, what did other tissues look like? How did it affect it? My best friend and I went into that office with a wiretap, and we interviewed him with specific questions.
Why did you need to tap? I mean, why did you need to wear a wire? Why wasn't he willing to just be interviewed for the case?
Absolutely not.
Why?
Because he would have to be subpoenaed to be put on the stand as an expert witness. At that time, he wasn't going to get involved with the amount of deaths that had happened because, in his opinion, according to his legal team, that was unrelated to the DMSO. He didn't want to get into it, just like we have alternative medicine now. It was the beginning of that time.
Huh. So you and your friend acted as husband and wife with a mother who needed this treatment or something?
No, we acted like sisters. It was my girlfriend.
Okay.
And we acted as sisters, and we went in, and I did all the talking. She talked about our mother. I did all the questions. During that interview, we had no knowledge that the information that we were recording was being scrambled. Immediately following the interview, when we went back to the office to put the cassette in so that she could do all the dictating, you know, and dictate everything out.
Yeah.
Yeah, the transcribing. That's when we heard the lawnmower noise, which we had never heard inside that office.
So the coroner had his office with some kind of a
debugging device.
Uh-huh. Were you able to get around that somehow?
We were, because the recorder that we worked with had several speeds in it. So if you sped it up, you could make the words and the transcript. If you slowed it down and you needed clarification, you could slow down the word and the complete pronunciation of that word would come through clearly. It took 3 days, and I missed the Journey concert in the meantime. I was very depressed over missing the Journey concert.
You know, I remember when this came around, I think people were using it on sore muscles or joints or things mm-hmm. like that. But then, of course, this was the early 80s. There was a lot of drugs going around. And the thing about DMSO was you would put it on your skin and it would enter your bloodstream immediately. So people got the brilliant idea of mixing their LSD or their cocaine or something with DMSO, and you just rub it on your arm and boom, it, you know, enters your bloodstream immediately. So, yeah.
And if I recall correctly, it was a veterinarian medicine used for horses originally and large animals. So there was
Did
some
Did you ever use this on your horses, Richard?
I never used it at all. It just seemed a little bit bizarre to me. So,
and it smelled horrible.
Yes.
Well, I like garlic, actually. We're going to, Bonnie and I are going to an Italian dinner later tonight. I'll think of DMSO. Okay. Do you ever have to testify in any court cases?
Yes, I have testified. Most of them have been domestic violence, surveillance, and expert witness. If Eddie needed me to back up something, if I was with him for a particular investigation. So, yes, I have. And I've been on two jury trials also during that time.
I'm surprised they would want you on a jury. I would have thought that one side or the other would say, this lady is too much of an insider. We don't really.
Well, they probably didn't know, would be my guess.
Well, they would ask questions to find that out. If they ask, what's your profession? And you say, well, I'm a private investigator. I work for Oscar Goodman. I mean, they would kind of know that.
Well, usually when they give you a subpoena and you contact the attorney's office, there is some type of a preliminary questioning. So they would know whether I was going to be for or against whatever testimony I was being used for.
That's testimony. He's talking about you being a juror.
Oh, well, I did never disclose that because I wasn't a juror at the time.
Oh, you weren't? Okay. So when you said jury trial, you're talking about as a witness, you were at jury trials.
Yes, at jury trials.
Ah, good. So I
not
misunderstood.
Not juror.
All right, good. I apologize. I missed that. All right.
So, a juror doesn't live on the edge.
Yeah.
Well, they do.
And those were the days when you could get out of jury duty.
Yes.
Much harder now.
It is. Some of these judges are real hard asses about it. All right. Now, we talked about Tony Spilotro last week. How well did you know him? What kind of guy did you find him to be?
I would not have judged him by as to be the powerful person that he was in the enforcer for the Chicago outfit and where his position was, just from a look. And I was pretty good at determining and deciphering some people's characters by a look. I did not get that from him. I know he was quiet, and I was instructed not to make small talk or ask questions that were personal to him because that would be offensive and it would be rude.
And maybe deadly.
Yes.
Okay. So,
but being a Gabby girl, sometimes my inquisitiveness would come out and I'd want a question.
And were you able to keep it under wraps most of the time?
Oh, absolutely. I'd have to sit on my hands and eat my lunch and be a good girl.
That doesn't sound like it's any fun.
Yeah.
All right. Who was Tommy Amato?
Tommy Amato was another member of the Las Vegas element of Mafia. And I do not know his position particularly because some of them have like what? A military position. I do not know his position. During the trial of the Hole in the Wall gang, after Colada had turned state evidence, there was an element of time where there was negotiation between prosecuting and defense. That would be Oscar Goodman and Steve Miller, I believe, was part of that. And they were negotiating how there could be a deal. Spilotro would have never given anybody up. That wasn't the type of man he was. He'd take a bullet to protect his closest right hand. The prosecutor had offered a negotiation and a deal. The communication from Oscar Goodman's office needed to be delivered to Tommy Amato, who was in a specific hotel. And my job was to deliver the sealed envelopes, not knowing the content or what was written on the written instruction between Tommy Amato at the hotel and the courthouse.
So Tommy was going to take the fall or something for?
It was my understanding after this negotiation that the deal wasn't taken and Oscar did the defense, which Tony Spilotro was acquitted of, that Tommy Amato would have taken the fall for Anthony Spilotro in exchange of other information.
And somehow.
So he would have done the time.
And his family would have been taken care of very nicely.
There would have been a handsome reward for someone to have agreed to step up to take the fall for Anthony Spilotro.
For which charge?
for the charges of racketeering, murder, gambling, all of the offenses that the FBI and Joseph Lebonsky was presenting. And this was after Kalata had turned evidence.
So the deal was refused. So yes. You don't know what happened to Tommy Amato?
I do not.
And was this the end of it, or was there any blowback to you?
Well, when I would deliver these envelopes, it was only Tommy Amato in the room personally, and I would deliver the envelopes, and he was expecting me, not only by my car description, but my physical description. Years later, 7 years later, I went to work for a bank in their foreclosure and fraud and collections department, and a gentleman came to the office identifying him as a U.S. Marshal from the district attorney's office who wanted to know if I had any knowledge of the content of those envelopes because they had proven surveillance tapes of me delivering something to Tommy Amato and doing the correspondence to Oscar Goodman's office.
Which figures, because that's what you were, that was your job.
Yes, that was my job. And I was drinking a Pepsi and eating corn nuts and, you know, eating Jack in the Box. I had no care in the world of what was in that envelope or who I was seeing.
You weren't even curious?
No.
I don't believe it.
But okay. Not when it came to that particular delivering of envelope.
It was too deadly to be curious.
Yes.
All right. So you told him you didn't have any idea what was in it, and he said, all right, have a nice day. Goodbye.
Well, he told me a little bit about what they were doing as they were doing more investigation on the current positions of the mob, who was moving into those positions after the hole in the wall gang. He did not disclose to me what their names were, but it was part of the ongoing investigation because although it would appear in some ways that the mob fell then, it didn't fall there. It fell quiet. So, yes, several people were murdered and no longer on the scene, but there were still people in place operating within the Las Vegas community. And I was already past that time.
So by past that time, meaning you quit being a private investigator in 85, was it?
Yes.
And why did that happen?
Well, it was very difficult to have a social relationship. I mean, a social life and intimate relationships when you're in that type of position because your schedule cannot be predicted. It didn't matter if you had concert tickets. It didn't matter what plans you had. They were going to be interrupted because you had to serve in your job. Vegas is a town where people come to either become well off at gambling, get away with problems, or get involved with criminal activity. So that is a constant 24-hour theme of this town. I would have to get up at 1 o'clock in the morning sometimes to take a case, but only get 15 minutes notice to be somewhere on surveillance or to be set up somewhere where I needed to be. And the man that I was dating, who later became my husband of 20 years, said, "You're not getting out of bed at 1 o'clock in the morning to go chase bad guys. It's not going to happen. I don't like it. You're not protected and you're not taking this serious enough. Your life is in danger. Find a real job."
So
I found a real job.
So choose me or the mob, huh? Or something like that.
It was something like that. He was with me several times when I had done things and I would get out of the car like I was a tough guy and I got this handled just because I had a gun and a badge and a radio. I was 100 pounds, dripping wet then, and very naive to some of the circumstances. I thought I was Barney Badass.
And so he said, quit them or I'm out of here.
He said, "I can't stand the worry because when you leave at 1 o'clock in the morning, I no longer sleep till you get home." And traditionally, if we were doing an investigation at that time of the day, there was always the $2 steak at the Horseshoe at that morning for breakfast with steak and eggs.
It figures. All right. So if I were... I certainly wouldn't want a wife of mine doing that.
No.
All right, so we have more questions for Gabby Girl. Before we do that, we're going to have a brief commercial break. South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. We are taping this show on September 2nd because as you listen to this show, Bonnie and I have been on a cruise for 3 weeks. And so now it's going to be aired the very last week of September. And on the first week of September, I have no idea what the South Point promotions are going to be in October. I apologize. Come back next week and we'll tell you all about them. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the game. The game of the week is Hot Roll Poker. This is a 10 coin per line game where one time in six you get a multiplier. The value of the multiplier is determined by a pair of virtual dice. If the dice roll a 2 and a 5, for example, you get 7x for the hand. The multiplier sometimes comes on the deal, sometimes comes on the draw, not both. There are no strategy variations for this game compared to the base game, and the hot roll feature is even money, meaning the dice roll adds no EV, but it does add a variance. And adding variance does, for a lot of people, mean adding excitement, so the game is popular with many people. All right, we are talking to Gabby Girl. There was once a sting that went down at the Las Vegas Hilton, although it may have been called the International at that time. What was that all about?
The sting was set up by a client who was largely invested in the Las Vegas Hilton to bust a particular bellman who was making anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000 a night running prostitution through the Las Vegas Hilton. Now, in most cases, that probably wouldn't be a concern to somebody or noticeable, but this gentleman and his team of people did this repeatedly for years. That's quite a large income and revenue taken away from the casino. And people...
Wow. I mean, first of all, that was sort of standard back in Vegas back in the day. And it just, I mean, I can understand, like, the police wanting to stop it or the IRS wanting to stop it. But the freaking greedy casino owners, like, he's making too much money?
Exactly.
Was that when Kerkorian owned it?
Yes.
Wow.
So I had to set up with a husband that I did not know.
Uh-huh.
Other than, hi, how are you, and see him in passing, because I needed a male investigator to be with me. We needed to be a young couple with a wife that had passed out, just newly married, honeymooning in Las Vegas, and I had to be the drunken sleeping bride in the bed so that my husband could get a prostitute.
Uh-huh. Was he going to bring her back to the room, or did you work out that?
Yeah.
That's pretty, I don't know, cold. Why I,
like,
care.
On the honeymoon, right? While the wife is asleep, he's going to bang a hooker? Man.
Well, I don't know if there was any banging, but there could have been some blowing.
Yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about. So, go on.
So this particular evening, we had been in the casino several times for the owner and had checked out their restaurants, all their services, their bartenders. And the goal was to go back to the room late in the evening or early morning as it was and to call the bell desk looking for a girl. That bellman came to the room, accepted money that was had dye on it so that it could be traced back to the hands, which then was passed through a ring of four different boys, young boys. When I say young boys, I'm talking like in their early 20s at my age, that were running such a racket within the hotel.
So was there more to it than just providing hookers, or that was it?
Well, when a Lieutenant Vice comes into your hotel and is constantly questioning your employees and that they can't catch him, that they actually need a sting operation, they need to see the exchange of the money in the hallways under the film, under the video, under the security cameras so that they can actually catch these guys because they had tried to do it for a long period of time. There was also cocaine involved in these transactions and exchange of money when people, they would get paid for people leaving their casino, the Hilton Casino, to go to another casino.
Wait, the bellman would get paid?
The bellman and the valet, because at that time, valet was a position that you were juiced into.
Yeah.
It wasn't something that you could just apply for. So it was like a whole ring of boys that were running that particular operation.
Well, I could see that if they were sending them away from the Hilton to another casino, that the owners could get upset about that.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I get them. It still seems weird that it was the owner of the casino and not the police if they're running cocaine, you know, and things like that.
I do believe that these young men, they had tried to do that a couple of times. And I would be unsuspected, and so would my so-called husband, who was at the hotel with me, would be less suspicious. So you're talking about probably $5,000 a week being taken out of the hands. And we don't think that that's a big deal, but that was a big deal to them at that particular time. And they were arrested because they had the dye on their hands. They had the film. They had everything they needed. And I don't know if the agent blew the job that was working with me or not. I was sleeping.
There's a joke there, but I think I'm just going to leave it. All right. Changing subjects. Once you had to serve papers on a boxer.
Yes.
That seems kind of tough. How did you pull that off?
Well, typically when you would serve any type of paper in a casino property, you would go to a head of security, and the head of security makes the arrangement. Either the person is brought back down to security, or you are delivered to the person in the hotel where you can effect service on them. In this particular case, because it was a major boxer and it was a sanctioned fight, we knew that the cooperation of the chief of police at Caesars, because we had a relationship with him, was not going to allow us to enter the boxing practice ring.
Because the casino
you
was
going to... the head of security,
yes.
Not the chief of police.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, yeah. The head of security.
Because the casino is going to make a lot of money on this fight, and...
Who was the boxer?
I don't recall his name. It wasn't a top pro boxer. It wasn't Tyson or Holyfield or any of those that I came to know later. But this gentleman had evaded service for a long time because he was protected by bodyguards and an entourage of people that were always with him when he was available somewhere at a sanctioned fight. And he had a sanctioned fight in Vegas. We knew that the practice was at a certain time in a certain part of the casino. Not in the casino, but in the rotunda in the convention area. Mm-hmm. There would be a way in, and he would definitely be there at that location. So me and my best friend, we both went into the hotel in a pair of shorts, tube tops, looking like we were one of those girls. And not those paid girls, but those fun girls. And we had to sneak through the back hallways.
Wannabe groupies or something.
Yes. Yes. We knew the back hallways because we'd been in back of house. We had been escorted by security. We knew him, but we also knew that we had to be quick enough because if the chief of security of Caesar's Palace knew that we were there, we would no longer befriend him. He would no longer cooperate with us. So we had to be quick, swift, and kind of incognito. We had to be in shorts, tube tops, ready to go. So we get in to the practice ring.
Into the ring? Into the area?
Into the practice area where the ring is, where they're practicing. They've done the weigh-in. They've done the official weigh-in. We are sitting on the bleachers. We identify who our guy is by the picture, by the papers. And this was one of those times where I was living on the edge because there was that nice $300 bonus attached to this particular paper.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a month's rent. What can I say?
Yes. You can say yes.
So we got there, and gentlemen were watching us, but they were really not watching us in the aspect of where we were at any given time. There was no suspicion. I, 3 feet from the rink where they were practicing, took 2 steps up with the papers in my hand to throw them at the known boxer, where my hand was grabbed by security.
Uh-huh.
Put to my side, and I was seated flat on my butt again at the bleacher. I had no idea that anything white in the air to a ring is the end of a fight.
So they thought you were throwing in the towel.
Right.
Okay, so they...
Well, but wait, I thought this was a practice, not a...
It was, but it's still something that is taken so sincerely that you don't raise your hand.
Or something?
Yeah, they were doing the practicing and getting ready for the major bout that was the following day.
Okay.
So
okay.
This was a Thursday or a Friday of a Saturday night, Friday night.
So the guy stopped you because he didn't want you to throw anything white. He had no idea that you were trying to serve a subpoena.
No, he had no idea that was in my hand were divorce papers for this particular fighter. So once he sat me down, I had to provide my ID. I had to disclose while I was there. He wasn't going to hurt me. He was just stopping me from doing that. He explained to me the rules and regulations of a fighting ring and why that could not ever be tolerated. Uh-huh. And then they escorted the fighter over to me, and he was served.
They cooperated with a subpoena? Did they know it was
a subpoena? It was divorce papers.
It was divorce papers.
So they cooperated with you serving the divorce papers?
Well, because I got so close, which means that I could get close again.
So, yeah, the answer to your question is yes, they very cooperated. Good.
The game of cat and mouse was over.
All right. So, but the director of security certainly would have known, eventually seen the tape, figured out who it was. And so did that end your friendship with him?
No, it didn't, because I kind of stayed away for a while and it was given to another server. That property.
Just like gamblers. You stay away for a while.
You just disappear for a while and they forget about you.
What was Chateau Vegas?
Chateau Vegas was a restaurant here in Las Vegas. There's lots of little kind of tucked away locations, hole in the wall kind of places for business.
Well, the hole in the wall is on Flamingo at Audrey.
Batista's,
yeah.
Yeah. Chateau Vegas was a great place. Yeah. It was a great place. It was on Desert Inn over by the Hilton. I think it was owned by Spalatro, but I'm not sure. He may have owned a piece of it. I spent many a late night in there. I have a friend who's a singer named Jerry Tiffy.
Jerry.
Yeah, he was singing there back in the early 80s, so I would go there a lot to hear him sing. And, you know, a friend of mine who was a very gregarious guy and loved to drink was in there late one night and 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And there's nobody in the place except some guy down at the end of the bar. And he says to the bartender, buy that guy a drink. And the bartender goes down and talks to the guy. And the guy comes up and he says to my friend, you do not want to buy me a drink, but thank you. And my friend says, why not? Have a drink. And he said, because if you buy me a drink, the FBI will be following you for the rest of your life.
Because that person, did that person have a name?
Yeah, that was Tony Spalatro.
Uh-huh. So did your friend recognize that name? And
Yeah, once he told him who he was, yeah.
He goes, I'm sorry, I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
No offense. All right.
I think it was probably pretty rare for a stranger to offer to buy Tony Spalatro a drink. But that's the kind of friend my friend was.
Now, I read Collada's book, and when he told about the Bertes, he made a big deal that he would never, they didn't have any guns, which I thought was surprising. I would figure mobsters would have guns. But he made a big deal in the book, you do not use guns because that's bad news. So what was that all about?
At the time, there was a law in place that if you conducted a crime and you used a gun, it was 5 to 10 mandatory. Most criminals...
On top of whatever else it was.
Right. Whatever the charges were, whatever the sentencing was going to be, the judge could add automatically 5 to 10 no matter what. When I worked at the bank years later, there would be robbers that would come in and put their finger underneath a blouse or, you know, a jacket and pretend to have a gun. That was proposed. If you used a weapon and the weapon was actually witnessed and seen by a witness that was there for the live crime, it was automatically 5 to 10. Use a gun, go to jail. There was no negotiation.
Right. I just find this. So presumably, if you didn't use a gun, you could steal $1 million and it was less than 5 to 10?
Well, it was less than 5 to 10 being added to whatever it was. So it could be 10 years.
Oh, being added. I see.
It could be 10 years for or 15 years for the...
Oh, okay.
Only $500,000, I think, is only 3 years. I don't know.
Well, and maybe with a saw and a hammer and ladders, it's presumed that you weren't robbing, you were doing construction.
at 9 o'clock at night on July 4th.
Well, I mean, those aren't burglar tools, right? I mean, because burglar tools itself is an offense. But yeah, right. I don't know. Can they call a ladder and a crowbar,
sledgehammers? There's some.
Yeah. Right.
All right.
With six of your closest friends that are wanted in seven countries.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Now, as I told our audience at the beginning of the show, Bonnie and I consider Gabby a friend, and I know her from a Toastmasters group I belong to. The beginning of this year, Gabby announced that she was going to be married by the end of the year. She's been a widow for 15 years or so. The end of the year is approaching. Gabby still hasn't found her guy. Any listener who might be interested, send your email address to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, and Richard and I will pass it along. Since we're not licensed to matchmake, there's no service charge for this transaction.
I think this is a really bad idea.
You think this is a bad idea?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I had interrupted this particular circumstance that Bob is talking about because it was just got so redundant during this meeting we were having about what people were going to do for the year that I just wanted to kick it up and liven it up and break it up a minute. And so I said, get married, because I knew that particular speaker wasn't going to be able to answer, and they almost choked on it. So ultimately, I do want to open my heart again and build another life. And God knows I've been living on the edge and have like 9 lives by now.
But you're not expecting Gambling with an Edge to be your OkCupid.
Right. Yes, that's true.
All right. Thank you again, Gabby. It's been a lot of fun, both this week and last.
Thank you for having me.
Richard, thank you. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.